in 10 matches. Norwich City 17th in the Championship. The trends are only heading in one direction. Wagner was at the wheel. Now the wheels are firmly off. Norwich City are pretty close to a crisis. I think we can call it that at this point after a 3-1 defeat to Blackburn Rovers at Carrow Road on Sunday at lunchtime in front of the watching nation. Of course, it was not a nice day at Carrow Road. We're going to dissect it all here on the Pinkin.com Norwich City podcast. I'm your host, Connor Southwell, joined as ever by my esteemed colleagues, Paddy Davitt and Samuel Seaman, to reflect on the events that unfolded inside Carrow Road this afternoon. Now, we could spend the first 20 minutes of this podcast dissecting all of the goals and speaking about how Norwich City fell two goals behind in 15 minutes. That was obviously compounded in the second half before Gabriel Sarr's late consolation perhaps made the scoreline look a little more flattering than perhaps it should have been in the end after a red card as well. But we're going to start with David Wagner. It's the place really that only we can really start at, to be honest, after what is a run that's really abysmal, to be frank. It's a really, really bad spell that Norwich City are in at the moment. And I wouldn't usually do this, but I've got a Norwich City match day programme in my hand. And I think it is worth reading some bits and bobs from Zoe Webber's column within it, because there are some interesting lines. Obviously, this was written pre-game, so add that context, etc. So it reads as followed. Like you, we are disappointed with our recent run of results, but we remain committed to achieving our objectives this season. To be outside of the promotion places at this point in the campaign falls below our expectations, and we're well aware that performances have not been at the level required. We know we must improve. Expectations at this club are high, and everyone strives to improve every day. When we experience difficult moments, we must remain unified and support each other in order to find a solution. And this is the crucial paragraph. David Wagner and his coaching staff are an integral part of that, and we have to show solidarity. Everyone has challenging moments in their professional lives, and we're here to help support him in every way possible. A poor run of form naturally brings scrutiny on any head coach, and David is no different. At Norwich City, we are committed to having a stable environment for our employees, players and coaching staff to thrive in. We will do everything we can to provide that platform. She goes on to speak about injuries, how hard everyone is working behind the scenes, etc. And then the sign-off to the column is this. It says, we have two big games ahead of us before the international break as we try to get back to playing the type of football we expect and return to winning ways. Her final paragraph, let's get behind the team as we fight for an important 3 points against Blackburn Rovers today. Those, obviously, we have to use those words because we haven't heard from any City senior figure subsequently after the game. So those are the words that we're leaning on. Paddy, I mean, that could be interpreted, maybe not by me. I'm not saying this is my view and how I'm interpreting it, but I'm sure some people will interpret that as somewhat of a vote of confidence. Where do you feel David Wagner stands tonight?
Well, I mean, you say we haven't heard from any senior figures and that level, executive above, we haven't, but we're fresh from walking back up the hill from Carr Road, where we have spoken to David Wagner. And because you've asked it in terms of what it means for David Wagner, as we sit here with that caveat, he intends to fight on. Directly asked, will you resign? No, that's not in my character. Do you think you'll get the chance to be, you know, taking the team for Cardiff, which is, of course, the next game prior to the international break? Again, repeated what he said to me at Sunderland previous weekend. That's for others to decide. And I guess that's where it comes full circle, because the people who need to decide are Zoe Webber, the executive, the board, obviously the Mark Attanasio group as well from across the pond. And that's where, if you want to link the two together, David Wagner and maybe the view from above, well, if that's representative of the view from above, even prior to today's defeat, then yes, he will still be in charge going into the international period. And, you know, for me, maybe how that plays out now, we saw at Carr Road earlier today, where bar, you know, an immediate reaction when the second Blackburn goal went in after 15 minutes, where it was directed firmly at, it was like a triple barrage. It was Wagner out, it was the board out, it was Stuart Webber out. Of course, Stuart Webber is going, but it was almost accelerate your departure. But that aside, worryingly, it was almost a general air of acceptance, I thought, from the rest of that game, bar the odd pocket at half-time and full-time, and, you know, the players' attempts at going round the pitch to acknowledge the support was given short shrift. I think that's safe to say from the ones who were still in Carr Road. But given, you know, that was minute 15, minute 16, we had that reaction of a toxic level. I don't think it's too unfair to label it as. For the remaining 75 minutes of that game, almost a general acceptance. And that has to be alarm bells inside the Car Road boardroom. Because if your fan base don't mean they don't care, of course they care. They care deeply, particularly the ones who are there and have paid their hard-earned as well. But if you don't feel vexed by the situation enough to, if you draw a pertinent parallel, Blackburn last season, Dean Smith at home, vastly different reaction, real prolonged, sustained anger. We move it on almost 12 months, give or take, to the day, and you know the mood is very different, and it's almost a, well, nothing's going to change above us, so why do we need to invest anything more in it than we already have on this journey of downward results and performances which were way below, to quote Zoe Webber, or to paraphrase Zoe Webber, you know, what the expectations are of this club this season, and as a club generally in the Championship, way below those levels. And as a result, unless something changes, and that for me is head coach, and it's not just head coach, it's one or two other positions as well, and then mid to longer term, something needs to change with this group of players in terms of changing it around again, then what is going to change? Nothing materially. And, you know, I would take issue with, particularly with the form line, as if this is a mini blip. This is now 8 defeats in 11 league games. Back end of last season was 1 win in 11. This is more of the same under David Wagner, despite having a window to try and put his imprint on the squad and work with him in terms of the mentality and what he wanted from him in terms of shape and structure. We're back here again. And this is worse now because he has had a transfer window and he has had more than enough time now to develop something that, I mean, the marked contrast with Blackburn in terms of the clear identity and style of play and what they're trying to do and players who fit the system and a cohesiveness to what they're trying to do. I mean, it was so easy for them today. You know, you could not get more of a marked contrast. And that, I think, the supporters will see that as well. And maybe that's at the root of this, is that things need to change and they're not hearing anything in terms of the noises above David Wagner to suggest that there is an acceptance of that, an acknowledgement of that, and that something will change. It just feels more of the same. And, you know, increasingly that time frame, if it is, you know, Cardiff and an international break, it just feels like it's a holding pattern waiting for Ben Napper to walk in the door. And then on you go, Ben. Sorry, but you've got one or two issues here in terms of the head coach and maybe one or two issues with the squad of players as well to sort out. But good luck, and we'll back you all the way. But I don't think they can afford now to wait for Ben Napper's arrival, because and you might say, well, materially it's one more game potentially, and that's Cardiff, and would it make a huge amount of difference for 90 minutes? But it's the optics. It's if you persist with him, as we saw the reaction this time last week when it was quite clear that they took a period of reflection after Sunderland and, no, we're sticking with David and he's going to be with us. You saw how that played out. You know, whether it's you take your measure from social media or just generally speaking to supporters as well. And it's unfortunately going to be the same again. And if we get the same result at Cardiff next week, then where do we go again? It just feels like they're marking time, they're treading water, and it actually needs somebody to get hold of it now and visibly get hold of it and then communicate that to the fans. Because for me, the big takeaway today is that sense, being there and witnessing it, is that almost shrugging your shoulders. And, you know, okay, you might prefer that if you're in the eye of the storm to fans having a go and saying your football is, I won't say the word, but, you know, what they labelled it, Dean Smith. But at least there was some passion and there was some sort of desire to change this and make their feelings known. When it gets to this point, the alarm bell should be ringing. And if they're not already, then 17th this far into the season, that tells you where this season's heading, and it's going to be nearer League One than it is any pretensions of challenging for the Premier League.
Yeah, spot on. And that comes to the point, Sam, really, which and Paddy's got to touch upon a few other issues, which we'll obviously have to delve into again, what wider kind of structural issues at the football club. But just to keep the focus on David Wagner, I mean, Paddy referenced there, Norwich ended the season last year with 1-11. Now, there's a lot of mitigation at the time why that was the case. I think injuries was even offered up as an excuse. That, not an excuse, that's the wrong word. It was kind of an excuse. There was kind of tried to change what they've done. They spoke about how important mentality was. Well, the mentality at the moment isn't great. And now they're in a run of 8 defeats and 11 in the league, but it's 8-10 in all competitions. I mean, a head coach seldom survives one of those runs, but two, I mean, even to be fair, I mean, we spoke last week about his demeanour at Sunderland. To me, he felt broken at Sunderland. Today just felt kind of accepting. I mean, he offered up, the form wasn't good enough. I mean, head coaches, they can't survive that sort of run, can they?
Yeah, to an extent. I agree with you. I think it's just, if he does manage to limp on, you have to ask questions about the long-term mentality and culture at this football club, because every single manager seems to get more time than they deserve. And, you know, you can speak about the culture of football at the moment and how managers don't get a lot of time, but in the context of every other club in the Football League, there aren't too many that have waited as long as Norwich City have, as consistently as they have over a really long period of time. You know, this isn't just in the last couple of years, it wasn't just with Dean Smith. In fact, you could probably argue Daniel Farke was one of the more brutal firings that they've had over a longer period of time. So, yeah, I think he will do very well to survive this period, you know, let alone this week, which is going to be, I'm sure, full of people hoping that he does lose his job. But yeah, you look at the two poor runs of form that there have been over the last few months, and given the levels of squad turnover there's been between those two runs, you know, David Wagner is the only real common denominator in the short term, and he is responsible for results. Yes, there's mitigation, but first of all, every manager goes through problems as a head coach. You know, there aren't any teams in the league that go a whole season without getting injuries, and most of them will have injuries to key players. But he doesn't seem like somebody who's able to find solutions. He feels like somebody who's got one very fixed idea in his head and can't really adapt that to challenging circumstances. And I keep going back to the moment when Paddy asked him about whether it was, you know, whether Adam Eder and Hwang required adaptation to fit into the team, and whether the team needed to adapt to them. And Wagner almost seemed surprised by the question and just said, no, you know, whoever's in that front two, we plod on in exactly the same way. And I just don't think there's been the levels of adaptation to problems that Norwich have needed in these troubling times, really. And you look at his career, we've spoken plenty of times now about how streaky he's been, and I just think he looks like somebody who, you know, harnesses momentum very well, and when he's got a strict idea in his head, it works very well for a certain amount of time, but they just haven't been able to change and to adapt to that. And I don't think he's got a squad of players, to be honest, that can challenge for promotion. When Zoe Webber talks about promotion places, I hope she doesn't mean the top two, because there's absolutely no chance of that whatsoever, even with a fair wind. I think playoffs is a difficult task, and they certainly won't be sort of towards the top end of the table. So I don't think this is a squad of players that under many managers would be able to challenge for promotion. But I also don't think Wagner is the man that's going to take them there. It almost seems like you have to put the blame on one side of things, Wagner or the squad, and whether there's the quality in the squad. But I just think neither of those elements is going to get Norwich promoted, to be honest. I think you could probably give Wagner a completely different squad, and I'm not sure he's got the skills at this stage of his career to go and do it. And the same with the players. I think whatever head coach you replace Wagner with, I don't think they will get them into the promotion mix this season. So for me, it's all about building for the future. It's quite clear that the club needs a top-to-bottom reset. And now that they've got the new sporting director coming in, they've got a fantastic opportunity to do that, to give themselves the reset that they had in 2017. And I hope they don't waste it by again convincing themselves that everything's fine and it just needs minor tweaks. That was what they did in 2022. They convinced themselves that they had a squad that was capable of challenging for promotion, only made four signings in that summer, when there was a lot of concern that that squad wasn't going to be able to challenge for promotion, but no, they convinced themselves that they were going to be able to do it, finish 13th. Again, you know, this season, yes, in the transfer market they did a lot of work, but they only really had one idea in the market when you look at that, and it was just, yeah, let's add some experience, let's add some mentality, and then they should have a squad good enough to go and challenge for promotion. But they spent barely any money. They've lost some very key players from the squad that finished 13th. I don't know what factors they're basing that target of promotion on. So for me, I just hope that Napa's arrival isn't just another situation where they can convince themselves minor tweaks are what's needed, because it does need an absolute top to bottom reshuffle. And hopefully, you know, I don't want to write off the season at this point in it, but I feel like it may almost need to be done, and they may almost need to use this next 7 months to prepare for next season, because I don't think there's the evidence that either Wagner or his players are good enough to get them promoted this season.
They need to get to 50 points first. I think that's definitely a more pressing target at the moment, the way the form is looking. And I think you're right to highlight quality. I just and I think, you know, in terms of how you framed it, this is clearly isn't a group capable of challenging towards the top end of the division, but also with the quality it has in it, Gabriel Saro, John Rowe, Kenny McLean, we could go on and on and on. It should not be 8 defeats in 10 in all competitions and 17th in the championship. And that ultimately will fall on Wagner, Paddy. But just a word for the players as well, because I think he's been quite at times quite pointed in his criticism. He's spoken about how individual errors from senior players have cost him. What did you make of them today? Because it always gets spoken about. I think Ewan Roberts wrote about it this week, and it's not a criticism of Ewan. It's just a cliched thing that I think gets bandied about in times like this, where it's, oh, well, you know, if they lose, they're not playing for him. And it's that cliched thing, isn't it? Which, unless you're in that dressing room, you never really know. And Kenny McLean actually said after the game that he felt that Norwich City squad have let David Wagner down in terms of their recent run of form. What do you make of the players at the moment? Because they're clearly crucial in this downward run of form. Obviously, all of the attention is on Wagner, and we'll speak about the moving elements above him. But just for the players at the moment, I mean, they should be receiving as much criticism, shouldn't they, for their involvement in this?
Well, I think the last podcast we did, post-Sunderland, I think, yeah, I was pretty strident that the players should take their fair share of blame. It isn't just David Wagner is the source of all ills, or above him, Stuart Webber, for that matter. Those players have consistently let themselves down, not let anybody else down. You know, particularly frustrating and almost baffling for David Wagner, I'm sure, and his coaches, is experienced players. If it was Kellen Fisher, Jaden Warner, you know, et al., then you can understand it a bit more. But you know, over recent weeks, you know, Yiannoulis, Duffy, Gibson, they're the ones that just spring to mind. Even today is a continuation of the theme. That first goal, Gabby Zara, just doesn't feel or sense Dolan running off the back of him. And the second one, look at Shane Duffy, he's gone galloping into central midfield, vacating the central defensive station from which Blackburn recycle the ball. The third goal is more of a collective malaise, because it's a Norwich attacking set piece and Blackburn counter. And even when they did get some numbers back, you know, there's a switch from Stacey's side to Zara's side. And again, his defensive limitations. But even then, when the ball gets cut back on the volley, back post, Dimi Yiannoulis is on his heels. It's just, I mean, it isn't enough just to say it's confidence is drained out of them and they're just making poor decisions. They just feel dazed. It's like they're sleepwalking on the pitch, and their decision making is too slow and ponderous. And you know, that word that keeps getting bandied about in this current situation, it's a malaise, and it's a malaise off the pitch. It's a malaise on the pitch. And you know, even today, you could say, well, you know, yeah, but that ultimately is David Wagner's responsibility. He made 4 changes again today, yet still got a similar type of performance and a similar type of individual culpability. So it has to be deeper than the manager and who he's picking and how he's setting them up and what he's asking them to do. There has to be an individual responsibility when, and he's used this phrase the last 2 or 3 press conferences, they need to execute, I think is the words he said, when they cross the white line. Well, 8 defeats in 11 in the league tells you they're not. And if Kenny said that to you post-match, then he's right. I would agree. And it's a lot harder because, as we know, you know, it's David Wagner, see you later, that's fine, a new head coach will come in. It's a lot harder now, particularly with some of the contractual situations around some of these senior players, how you refresh and renew this squad of players, because you can't just put them to the side and say, see you later. I mean, again, we saw Jaden Warner come in today for his league debut, and he must be excused from any culpability because such a difficult situation. Got very little assistance from an experienced pro alongside him in Shane Duffy at centre-back. Last weekend, Kellen Fisher. For me now, it's players like those two, Borja Sainz, John Rowe, who's obviously done it. That's where the sense of renewal is going to come from in this group of players. But, you know, I think I do recall saying last week on the podcast, it isn't just David Wagner. It's Dean Smith's tenure. It's Daniel Farke's tenure. There's a core group of players here. Some who are injured at the moment, some who aren't injured. They're letting down successive managers. So you have to go straight to the heart of the matter and say, there's an issue with this group of players or a core element of this group of players. Why that is, you'd have to probably sit them down in a quieter moment and try and work out why players of an ability level, which is considerably higher than 17th, whatever the limits of their ambition, you can debate that, but they're far better than 17th. Now, over three successive managers, if you pitch it from the end towards the end, the last 12 months or 6 months, say Farke's tenure onwards, three successive managers, head coaches, have been able to get a tune out of largely a similar group of players. So, you know, that is a far harder task in terms of resetting, because essentially you're going to be reliant on a lot of those certainly more experienced pros again when inevitably David Wagner has moved on and a new individual comes in. That's a worry. And it also probably, to tie in Stuart Webber, it cuts to the recruitment again, the failures in recruitment over successive windows that, you know, and I don't buy necessarily this discourse around Stuart Webber that, you know, he leaves the club in a worse position than the one he inherited, because it was a basket case that he inherited, because it's far more nuanced than that. But I think in regards of the squad and the profile of the squad, I think this squad is poorer than the one he inherited, if I'm brutally honest. And that's an indictment of him and the people around him, that 6 years on, you know, that group of players that are now going on the pitch for Norwich in the Championship, I don't think are a better than a squad of players who, where did they finish under Alan Irvine? Was it seventh or eighth?
Eighth.
So, you know, that for me, when we discuss, and I know I've gone off on a bit of a tangent, but when we discuss Stuart Webber and his legacy and you know, the impact he's had at this club, that's the biggest indictment is what he's done in terms of the squad and the makeovers of squads to leave it where he's going to be leaving it now compared to what he inherited. So, yes, that's a long-winded way of saying I think the players are as culpable as Wagner or Webber or anybody else in this equation. And that's why it's going to take, you know, unfortunately, quite a long period of time to unpick it all and go again. And the person pulling them threads together will be Ben Napper.
Yeah, we'll come back to Stuart Webber in a little while. I just want to round off this segment talking about David Wagner. We've kind of referenced the players there and the fact, I think, we're talking about mentality, given that was a key focal point of what they tried to do in the summer, is really concerning. Agree, the squad composition's not right. I think they've got 11 players who will be 30 or over by the end of this month. That is just mind-boggling, really, compared to what they strive to be. And again, that probably comes back to Stuart Webber ultimately. But going to ask you both, and I'll start with Sam. I mean, if you had £5, and obviously events can change very quickly, but if you had £5 right now, would you expect David Wagner to be in charge of Norwich City at Cardiff next weekend?
It's only £5. I'm not asking this, but
it's only £5 plus reputation, really, isn't it?
You have one of those, do you?
You've had me there. Yes, I think he'll be there. I'm not necessarily saying he should be there or that fans would be especially pleased with that, but just from the experience of being involved with this football club for nearly 15 years, it feels like the character of the football club is not to do it this week. I also just think the strands of the international break and Ben Napper add another level of complexity to it. I'm not 100% sure of that. In fact, I'm probably sort of 54-55%.
Talking yourself out of it now.
Well, no, I'm not gonna go back on it. I just I wouldn't be surprised if they do it, but it just feels like if I have to come down on one side, I can see him struggling through to Cardiff. I think if Cardiff was at home, it might be different, but the fact that they're hundreds of miles away, and he probably won't have to deal with a whole Carrow Road against him, means I think he might just get away with it this week.
Paddy, are you joining Sam on the fence?
I've committed.
Yeah, you have committed.
He's fiver down on him. Yeah, I think he'll be in post, and based A on the soundings we got pre and post match last weekend, that it was almost without them framing it as such, it was almost he'll get these games this side of the international break. And then the other thing is, and you've led us in to the podcast today with it, is the Zoe Webber context. And of course, it's moved on now in terms of the result today. But if that is representative of the view at the very highest echelons of power at Carrow Road, then it's not going to shift from there to he's out the door between now and Cardiff. So, fiver for me is he stays. You, Connor?
I agree with you both. Yeah, I agree with you both. I think, and we'll come on to the other aspects of this debate in the second half, but it does feel to me a little bit like the whole changes on the horizon is being used as a little bit of a mask to hide behind at the moment. Because, you know, the numbers that we've spoken about, the issues that we've spoken about, the repeated issues that we've spoken about, and by the way, he's kind of accepted all of them himself, that shouldn't be the case, but it does feel increasingly like it will be. In part two of the pod, we're going to discuss Stuart Webber, we're going to discuss structures, Ben Napper, we're going to talk accounts, we're going to talk all of that good stuff. We're going to take a little bit of a pause and then we'll come back in just a few seconds. Okay, so part two of the pod, we've kind of done the David Wagner debate. That probably lends us on to the other issues at Norwich City at the moment. A lot of the issues that supporters are speaking about at the moment. And Paddy, really, there's no place to start other than the sporting director position. So let's start with Stuart Webber first and foremost. There were, as you said earlier, pointed chants about him and the acceleration of his timeline. I think we said last week that we probably wouldn't expect him to hang around for too long in this handover period that is going to take place. But unless he was elsewhere in Carrow Road today, he certainly wasn't in the director's box for today's game, as he wasn't against Middlesbrough. But he did find time to go and watch Manchester United and Newcastle in the cup in midweek. I'm leading the question with the optics of that, irrespective of the reason, because he may have had a very good reason as to why he wasn't able to make either of the Norwich City games. But the optics of it aren't great, are they? For somebody who is still employed by Norwich City Football Club to not be there, particularly in a situation as difficult as this is for David Wagner, for the club more generally, for the mood of the fans, to just not be there. I don't know, like I said, I don't know, there may be a very valid reason as to why he hasn't, but and we wouldn't of course judge that, but the optics around it don't look great from a fan's perspective. If you're a paying fan and you look at the director's box and you see an empty chair where he should be sat, that doesn't, the feelings that you would have, I imagine, aren't particularly great around that.
Well, it feeds into this idea that there's a holding pattern and they're rudderless in terms of the apex of the football operation, which is where he is positioned in the hierarchy of the football club. Yeah, because we don't know. We just don't know what the reasons were why he wasn't in attendance in the Carrow Road director's box. But as you say, you know, that was the case the previous Carrow Road home game as well. He was at Sunderland. It's kind of feeds back into this handover sort of element that again has, you know, opened him up to a lot of criticism, and that he's very much framing his, not only his departure in terms of how long, but what it looks like, and you know, that isn't a great look when it's set against the backdrop of a team who are failing tremendously on the pitch, and not in a good way, tremendously. 8 defeats in 11 is, it's, you know, when they, I'm sure, sat down, however far out it was, and they mapped out that probably at the point they knew that Ben Napper wasn't coming into the building until November the 27th officially, and felt they'd be able to go this route. This is by some measure the worst possible scenario that could have unfolded. You know, if you flip it and Norwich had continued on in the same vein as they started the season, you know, unbeaten in eight games, was it, one defeat in eight, and they were in and around the top six, then there'd be nobody talking about this whatsoever. So, you know, it's events, dear boy, events, but it isn't a good look. And as we're led to believe, the handover period will be fairly brief, and days rather than weeks, and certainly months. He's not going to be on Ben Napper's shoulder between now and the end of December. And the day that Ben Napper starts the job, it will be Ben Napper calling the shots. So, you know, it is only 2 weeks or so to go. But I guess it's what he represents now, and that is the past. And that, for many fans, you know, bar the brief, glorious period of success under Farke twice in the championship, it's since that point really a sad decline on and off the pitch, to the point we find ourselves now, and he is effectively the poster boy for that. So, you know, it's probably understandable that supporters are going to turn their attention on him rather than focus exclusively on David Wagner. So, yeah, but I don't really want to get into why he wasn't there, because we just simply don't know. So it's, you know, we're not going to leave ourselves open to conjecture. But you know, there's absolutely no doubt. And as I say, from what we're led to believe, there's nothing in how he's viewing this period that he's going to be hanging around. I think it's very much November the 27th is the date. I think QPR would be the last game he's technically involved with. Which is the Saturday before, and so you'd expect him there, because that'll be the next car ride home game, won't it, straight after the international break. I think for me, what it basically today, the visible sense of that, in terms of you talk about optics, is just more of the, we're not listening, our hands are over our ears, we're in denial, if you want to be brutal about it, in terms of a club at the top of the club, and we're just going to wait for Ben to come in and sort it all out. And, you know, clearly that's a hell of a task that he's going to find himself faced with in very short order, if they're going to run along those lines, basically. So, yeah, for me, it's as more fuel to the sort of belief that they're basically unwilling to make any hard or fast decisions.
Yeah, and it does go back to the optics point of it, and this kind of narrative that's been building, Sam, around... I guess leadership to an extent, but also decision making. Who does in this situation, when there is obviously a decision that needs to be made, how do they go about doing that? And if ultimately, and again, I don't know, this is maybe really hands on and you may be really involved, but it goes back to that point, optics, doesn't it? If you've got somebody there who isn't beginning to turn up to Carrow matches for whatever reason, if there are decisions that are being put off, then that ultimately comes to people above him, doesn't it? There are other people. Neil Adams was there today, technical director. Delia Smith, Michael Wynne-Jones, Zoe Webber was there. You've obviously got the American element as well. There are enough people there that you could reach a collective decision on if you've got somebody. And again, we don't necessarily know that this is the case, but I guess what we're saying is there's enough people around that table to make a decision if they felt, which, to be honest, they should do at this stage, that there was a decision to be made.
Well, yeah, there was certainly enough people there, and I think there's a reason why the Sky Sports cameras zoomed in on Neil Adams at one point. It's because the reason why he's at the club is to, even before this news of Stuart Webber leaving the club, the reason he was there was to make the decisions when Webber wasn't available, right? You know, so theoretically, had they wanted to make the decision this afternoon, it would have been, I presume, Neil Adams going down into the changing room and, you know, in a similar way to Webber dismissing Farke at Brentford, letting Wagner know that his services were no longer required. So there should be enough people in that building. Otherwise, you know, what's the point, really? What's the point in having a committee? What's the point in having a board? If Stuart Webber really is the only man that can make those decisions, then he doesn't need staff around him. It should just be Stuart Webber, David Wagner and the team. And, yeah, I don't really understand the structure if they aren't able to press forward into the future without Webber being there. I do understand that you don't want to hire a new coach until Ben Napper comes into the building. But you look at how long it took them, or how long it's traditionally taken them to do it, and how long these
Well, I'm sorry to jump in, but I mean, I referenced last week when they sacked Alex Neil. I mean, they had Alan Irving. How long was he in charge for?
It was two months or something.
So
did a good job.
He did do a very good job. There is a precedent here for this type of thing happening. And I guess a different angle to this debate is this a fair situation for Ben Napper to walk into, to say, there you go, mate, everything's on fire. You've got to put it out. It's your first role as a sporting director. Go and make some big decisions. That feels like a really harsh situation to put him in.
Well, I've had a lot of people say to me that it's quite a lot of pressure to put on him to go and hire a new head coach. But it takes on another level when you consider they're putting him in a position, if they don't make the decision to fire Wagner between now and his arrival, it's very, very likely you're forcing him to come in and within the first few days probably throw his weight around and get rid of Wagner. You know, we've spoken about, I think, a lot of the conversation around Napa will be what sort of strategy he takes when he comes into the club. Of course, when Weber arrived, he did do a bit of that. He did do a bit of showing how things were going to work henceforth, and making those decisions of releasing players who had big reputations at the club, of getting rid of a lot of staff who he didn't feel serviced the club in the way that he wanted them to. And Napa now doesn't really have that choice, because as soon as he comes in, he's going to have to do big things. And it's not just, if they don't get rid of Wagner before, it's not just going to be the positive thing of hiring a new head coach, because that's always greeted with a new level of optimism. You know, it doesn't take much to cast our minds back to when Wagner was appointed, and even though there were doubts, there immediately felt like a breath of fresh air at Carrow Road and a little bit of relief amongst those supporters. So if you do give him the opportunity to just hire a new head coach, then even though that is a bit of pressure to get it right, you're not throwing him straight into the fire of criticism and negativity and potentially trouble with fans. Whereas if he's got to now make this decision immediately on the first day, he's going to have fans theoretically screaming at him to make a decision that they really want made. So I feel for him a little bit in that sense. Of course, it's not going to be easy however he comes in, given the way that things are going on the pitch. But yeah, I think they've got to be in a position to act before then, and you know, even consult him. I know there's going to be sort of notice periods and stuff with Arsenal, but what's stopping them giving him a phone call and just asking for his opinion on it? So I think it's a little bit of a farce that they're now in a sort of holding pattern. You don't have to make any decisions that will impact the long term. I don't think anybody at this point is under the illusion that Wagner is going to be at this football club for the next 5 years. You know, realistically, it's very likely at this point that Napa has to make a new appointment before long. So they're not making decisions that are irreversible and, you know, going to stretch out into the long term, because I don't think it was ever really a big project with Wagner at the head. You look at the sort of players they brought in this summer, and it did feel a bit like the sort of thing where if it didn't work this season, it's quite clear that Wagner wasn't going to be the man to take it forward. So I do feel for Napa, but they certainly could be doing things to help him out at this moment in time.
And the last time they had a change of sporting director, or appointed their first sporting director, Paddy, it goes back to that point. They removed Alex Neil because they didn't feel that he was best served to take them in a new direction. And Stuart Webber kind of walked into a blank canvas. He was able to kind of splash it with the details that he wanted to, namely, obviously, Daniel Farker as head coach. That was the man to lead his vision of how he saw it going. And obviously, there was a bit of turbulence along the way, but everyone knows kind of what happened there. Does that feel like the situation that Ben Napa needs to inherit now? Because, I mean, you referenced it earlier, and I'll say it again, change on the horizon shouldn't be used as a mask to kind of kick the can down the road or to shirk making a big decision. It feels incredibly unfair to me to say to a guy who's fairly young, who's not done the job before, there you go, mate. By the way, you've got this issue, this issue, this issue. And as Sam said, there's a narrative there. Now there's an easy narrative for them to kind of cash in terms of this end of era feel that there is around the club. They could almost start afresh in that kind of situation.
Yeah, exactly. And Sam's spot on, you know, in terms of the removing the David Wagner element of the equation, that's not something that needs to come across Ben Napper's desk at all, really. That can be done. And, you know, he may welcome that, because then he comes in with a, well, that was nothing to do with me, David Wagner. That change has been made. I will now take it on from here. And to draw the parallel you raised there with Weber, that was the visible representation of, i.e. Daniel Farke's appointment, of this is my head coach, this is how we're going to go about the task. And it goes back to what I said at the start, you know, Blackburn today, the identity, the style of play. There's other styles of play, there's other identities, but just something that you can see. And it's worth reiterating that, of course, a key individual in that club now is Greg Broughton, who was, you know, instrumental in his period at Norwich in hothousing players like Aarons and Lewis, and even John Rowe, I think, was on his watch.
Jaden Warner as well.
Jaden Warner. So, you know, and I'm not claiming that he is the sole reason why Blackburn look like they're moving along very clear alignment in terms of top to bottom of their football club. But he's clearly had a huge input into that. And, you know, whatever the technical label you attach to Greg Broughton at Blackburn, Ben Napper's coming in with a similar brief. So, I mean, going back to what we said on last week's pod, it does feel that they've lost their way now, and that it is really now at a point in time, and aided, of course, by, as we know, the situation that's happening at board level with Attanasio and his group, and an acceleration almost now once this allotment is ratified, that he moves level with Delia and Michael in terms of the shareholder mix. And of course, you know, it's not huge tip then for him to then him and his group be in overall sort of minority control, if that makes sense. So, you know, you have that sense of the plates are shifting, maybe not quickly enough for a lot of supporters, but they are in that boardroom after 20, 25 years of pretty much status quo. And that then can now be replicated at the apex of the footballing pyramid in the football club by Ben Napper's arrival. And for him, who he appoints in terms of head coach, that will signal a lot of things about his thinking, because nobody really knows. You know, yes, we can look from afar at the work he did at Arsenal, but it's not a like-for-like job spec. So he is coming in, and there's a little bit of an element of what is this guy all about? What are his footballing principles? What does he stand for? What does he want to see in terms of putting an imprint on a football club? All of those things will become very clear once we see the identity of the head coach he appoints. And I think in terms of that renewal, that feeling of, OK, yep, that chapter is now firmly closed. We move ahead now with change at board level, change at shareholder level, change with sporting director, and change in the dugout as well, and the attendant, obviously byproducts I'm sure that'll bring in terms of the mix of the coaches around the new person. Then you do then very definitively have a club that is looking to the future, that is more optimistic and forward-thinking, rather than, unfortunately, what we have now is mired in kind of looking back with nostalgia to the good days and the Stuart Webber, which increasingly feel a long way away. So, yeah, for me, it has to come pretty early. But in terms of uncoupling the Wagner element of this for Ben Napper, I mean, that can be done in the here and now. That doesn't have to wait for him to walk through the door on November the 27th. Albeit Sam is right, you know, you'd like to think he'd have some input, whatever the contractual situation is that allows him to have that. Because if he just pitches up on the 27th and he walks through the doors, and it's and that's the first time he's, you know, he's really able to put his mark on anything, then it's going to be a very challenging period for him in the short term at least. But I think for me, if you're Ben Napper, you want to come in and you want to be able to do something in terms of shaking it up on the head coach front, because that, of course, he will come in with these mid to longer term objectives, and that's going to take much longer period of time to change cultures and change individuals in key part departments within the football club, you know, not just what we see on the pitch, but in the here and now. If you want to connect with a fan base and take them on a journey, bring in a new head coach and then we'll see and we'll go from there. But hopefully they see it as an opportunity, hopefully he sees it as an opportunity, that this is actually, you know, as you made the point with Stuart Webber when he first came in, it was a blank canvas almost. There is a difference in terms of, you know, Stuart Webber was basically coming in at the end of a season, so he had a full summer and a transfer window, and he had that time really freed from the necessity to pick up points in the Championship. Unfortunately, Ben Napper isn't going to be afforded that. He's going to come in pretty much halfway through a season, and that's a dimension that Stuart didn't have to contend with initially. But parking up, there's no doubt that, you know, fans will want to see something that's different, not a continuation of a theme, but a real break from the past. And in the short term, that is who he appoints as his new head coach.
Have you guys seen that gif of, you know, the guy that walks into a room and he's holding pizzas and there's just people swirling T-shirts around on fire and yeah. It's just chaos. It kind of feels like he's walking in a little bit to that. But it is right. And I think, Sam, what underpins all of this conversation, and we heard it to an extent at Carrow Road amongst kind of the apathetic spells of the fan base today and the acceptance, really, it was kind of a shrug of the shoulders, oh, here we go again. There is a desire now for change and widespread change, and it does feel, and I guess it's probably nothing marks that more than Wagner and Weber and their relationship. The fact that Weber in January picked up, or December, whenever it was, picked up the phone and got the band back together, so to speak. Yeah. It was an attempt to kind of turn the clock back to 2016 and 17, and actually probably found themselves behind the curve in that regard. That desire for change now feels like a real common consensus and a common position within the fan base.
Yeah, I think they want to see a bit of youth and a bit of hunger, and Napa's appointment for me is the sort of appointment that, although obviously Weber was the first sporting director they had, feels like the sort of appointment that historically has done well at Norwich, in terms of, yes, he's come from a bigger club, but he's never been a sporting director before. He will be absolutely desperate to succeed in this role, and it's certainly a step up for him from loans manager at Arsenal. I think that appointment of Wagner, as much as they have had success before and Weber did pick him out of being relatively unknown at Huddersfield, he's somebody who now has been around the block a little bit, whose name was known and who has already reached levels much, much higher than Norwich City, to be honest, and been at clubs much bigger than Norwich City. Of course, he's managed in the Champions League, managed Schalke, who are a very big club in Germany, and then, having failed at that level, came to Norwich. And I don't think we've seen too many people who have done especially well for the club sort of in that role, not even really players. So I think Napa's appointment is the sort of one that Norwich fans seem to connect with best, and he's somebody who's coming up. And I hope that when he eventually does employ a head coach, I hope that he chooses somebody who similarly is on the way up. In fact, I hope it's somebody whose name I've never heard of before, because they're the ones that tend to do the best at Norwich, and they're the ones that tend to be doing well actually across football at the moment, are the ones that clubs are taking chances on and looking outside of the box, because ultimately you don't get the best value from people that everybody already knows about, because if they were as good as you're hoping they're going to be, they'd probably be somewhere better beforehand, because everyone knows about them. Everyone in, at least in England, that operates sort of in the Football League will have heard the name David Wagner before. And why didn't any of them take a chance on him when they didn't have a manager before? It was quite a long gap between him leaving Young Boys and joining Norwich. So I think there is a desire for that feeling of freshness and hunger and excitement, which there hasn't really been for the last few years. You look at the sorts of players they signed in the summer. Of course, I've spoken about Wagner. Dean Smith was another one who had peaked higher than Norwich. And I just hope Napa can bring with him a sense of freshness, like I spoke about, and a plan that actually takes the club forward, even if results aren't going especially well on the pitch, because he's not going to be able to wave a magic wand and change everything all at once. But what we saw in the first season of Weber and Farker was progression on the pitch towards the style that Farker wanted to see, even if the results weren't always improving. And off the pitch, there was this goal of sustainability and improving the training ground and leaving a legacy. And we were slowly seeing those things being built. But, you know, yes, there may be a recovery hub being built at Colney right now, but really, what sort of progression are we seeing from signing Shane Duffy to a 3-year deal, or signing, you know, Adam Forshaw and Danny Bart for a year? I don't think we're seeing much of that progression and hunger and excitement to go forward. So admittedly, Napa is in a difficult position in a lot of ways, but I think where things are good for him are that they haven't really been much worse at Norwich for a good long while, and the only way is up. And I think, fingers crossed, the only way is up.
I was going to say, it's definitely not.
But, you know, for him, I think there's a lot of room for improvement, and that actually may suit him, and that's something that these supporters can and have been excited about. So, yeah, personally, I'm sort of looking forward to hopefully a little bit of that optimism coming back.
Fun quiz question for you both. David Wagner, how many games in charge do you have of Schalke and Young Boys? It's the same number. Either of you guys know? You can pluck one if you want out of thin air.
43.
It's 40 at both. How many games has he had at Norwich? 39 is the correct answer, okay. Sam. So there's some nice symmetry. Really, really weird symmetry there. He had 40 at Schalke, 40 at Young Boys, and today was his 39th game in charge.
If you'd thrown that at us before the £5 question earlier, then it would have been very obvious. Yeah. He's got
You're keeping £5, yeah. Let's talk accounts then, Paddy, because they came out this week. Really interest. There's a really good thread on social media from Kieran Maguire, who is the guru in terms of footballer finances and kind of distilling accounts into something that thickos can read like me and make sense of. I think it's fair to say, Paddy, they don't paint a great picture. Is that kind of a fair assessment? It's always really difficult when they drop to delve into the numbers and have a ready-made assessment straight away. But the days thereafter, I mean, the picture doesn't look particularly great, does it, from a Norwich City perspective?
Well, I mean, quoting Maguire, and he says his analysis of a forensic nature of that rather weighty document with lots of columns and lots of numbers on is they're £96 million in for borrowing, which is an astronomical figure.
It's not sustainable, that, is it?
Absolutely not. And to drill down a little bit further than that, net £5 million last year on interest payments alone. That's not even clearing the debt / loans / borrowing. £5 million, which is a frightening figure, really. Now, they would say, I'm sure, that these are snapshots in time, and that was the picture on June the 30th this year, and subsequently they will be out of that period. It touches on it in the documentation, £17 million or so surplus transfer-wise from last summer. That's not including these figures. There's a parachute payment as well. But irrespective, that is deeply troubling, and obviously flows into this dissection of Stuart Webber's tenure, which is a little bit fair and purely in financial terms, because I think there is mitigation. What do they estimate the pandemic hole for Norwich City was? North of £30 million. So you've got that to factor in if you want to frame this in terms of Stuart Webber. Look at the impact on our club. Look at the finances. But that aside, it wrote about it today, and the point is, I mean, it just, even if you're not an accountant and you don't have a real grasp of the numbers, what is irrefutable now is that the reliance on Marc Attanasio and his vehicle, Norfolk Holdings, to navigate themselves through this period. I mean, we know the mechanics of the share allotment process, and that they've obviously refinanced some of the unsecured loans, but even allowing for that, it's a very, very challenging situation, and probably limits the scope what they can do purely in terms of throwing money at this problem on the footballing side of it in the squad. And that was underlined and underscored by what they did last summer, the prevalence of free transfer signings, essentially. Fashnacht and Barley Mumu, you could say that was an interchangeable bit of business in terms of transfer fees. So it's going to be that for the foreseeable, really, which places even more onus on in terms of the last segment we've discussed on Napa and whoever he appoints as a head coach, in almost as Farker did, melding something from resource which probably doesn't look that appetising at this stage, because they're not going to have the financial power to do anything. I mean, it is, I think, very, very reassuring, I think, if you're a Norwich fan, that you do have Attanasio and his group as the financial backstop. Because if you just looked at those figures, you would be very concerned for where this club is heading, because it's pretty clear, I think, they're not going to be turning on the Premier League broadcast revenue tap anytime soon in terms of getting back to the Premier League. Yes, obviously, wages and salaries will decline in line with sustained football at this level. But even that's not really going to stem the bleeding in terms of the existing loans that they've taken out, the servicing of those loans. And we will find out a little bit more at the AGM, which is coming up fast on the horizon. I think it's probably going to fall somewhere between the Watford and the Bristol City game. I think there's an expectation that maybe Attanasio will be present at that. And if he is, I'm sure, you know, shareholders will get the opportunity to pose questions to what increasingly feels like the guy who is the power, the emerging power. And we all know that. We can all see that. We know that there's this process in place or this roadmap in place that, you know, there's going to be a lockstep approach with Delia and Michael. We'll see how that continues if it declines on the pitch to the point where, you know, they're in danger of, dare I say it, flirting with the third tier of English football. But there's no doubt that for Norwich to solve this, it isn't just going to be Ben Napa, that's for sure. It's going to be Mark Attanasio. And, you know, those figures just underline that this is a very challenging environment and landscape for the next phase of Norwich City as a football club.
Yeah, just to read you the key figures, I guess, from the 22-23 accounts. Income, 76 million, that's down 43%. Wages at 56 million, that's down 52%. I think it basically puts Norwich City's average wage bill, or the average, if you plucked a person out for the football club, they would on average be earning 25,000 a week, which is still a remarkable amount of money. Pre-tax loss of 27 million, which is up 15%. Player purchases at 15 million, player sales at 7 million. And obviously we could have a long discussion about the fact that they haven't really been able to generate big money for a player in a significant period of time. Emi Buendia, really their last major sale. I know on Bamardelli they got decent money for and errands and whatnot. But in terms of that 20 million plus kind of bracket, he's certainly the last player in that one. And then borrowings, as you mapped out, Paddy, 96 million, which is up 37%. And is a truly eye-watering number, really. And I guess, Sam, this all, just to feed this into the discussion that we're having, all feeds into the factor that, irrespective of who is Norwich City sporting director or head coach, the situation that they're inheriting is really, really difficult financially. The resources aren't particularly great. Yeah, I mean it's tough, isn't it, at the minute? If you're a fan, to find optimism in a lot of things Norwich City related, but certainly in terms of on and off the pitch.
Yeah, definitely, and it's something where we always talk about the footballing decisions that a sporting director makes and the appointments they make and the signings they make. But you know, Ben Napper's head will certainly be in those numbers, and he'll be well aware of the effect of everything that he does. And it doesn't look like he's going to be able to spend much at all for a long while unless they can get promoted pretty quickly. I suppose the one piece of optimism that Norwich fans can have is that they did it on a shoestring budget a few years ago, so it can be done. But, yeah, especially given the number of times we've been told about sustainability and the club's future and how financially the club would never be risked, to look at that, £96 million in debt. I mean, yes, they feel better about it, and it feels better because Mark Attanasio is involved, and obviously he's a name who's attached to the football club. But just as a fact, £96 million in debt is incredibly unsustainable and really poor, and obviously there's a chance that decreases. But after last season and that £66 million loan coming out, it felt like things could only get better. And it looks like from those numbers they've got worse. But the main thing we can read into that, really, and it's not going to be news to many people, but it is that the worse you perform on the pitch as a football club, the harder it is to perform off the pitch. And you can see from those numbers why the clamour for the Premier League is as panicked as it is at times in the Championship. And Norwich, now that they've already taken out loans against all of their parachute payments, are just one of those clubs that is scrambling to try and get to the promised land. And they have to strike that balance between taking the risks with their finances and staying sustainable in case they can't achieve that promotion goal, because everyone in the Championship wants it and only three a season get it. Especially when you consider the quality of the clubs that are coming down and the amounts of money that they're receiving, it's a really, really difficult task. So, a very tight financial situation for Napa to come in and navigate. But it's been done before, and that's probably where the hope comes from if you're a Norwich fan.
Indeed. Let's end the pod on some positives. We had Darren Eady in this week. He took a picture with Darren Eady, which might be the best thing that I've seen for a while, which was nice.
You know, I keep forgetting to mention it, but look at the drooping nature of the inflatable canary.
Well,
if that's not
well,
a metaphor,
we're going to use it as a barometer of where things are. So if Norwich City are doing well, it's going to be. I mean, it's heavily packaged. That's going to fall out now. But that's reflective of the mood, I think.
It's a metaphor, mate. Yeah, there you go. Visual metaphor.
And what better way to end the podcast but than a metaphor of a drooping inflatable canary in our batch, although still well inflated. So the air's not come out of it yet, even if it has on the pitch, which is an apt place to leave it. Thank you very much for watching, for listening. We'll be back next week, providing nothing happens in the interim, for the next podcast, and we'll be reflecting on Cardiff and all of the fun and games that follow in South Wales. See you soon.